CliffCentral.com.
That's right, CliffCentral.com and the MKT show with Mbulelo, who's with us this morning, as well as Weza Matumane. You may remember Weza from the early days of CliffCentral.com, and he was with us for a good couple of years doing his own show alongside Simpiwe and Lesego for a while and standing in for everybody, and kind of made his voice so well known, and he's so good at that stuff now. You hear him in advertising all over the place. So welcome, Wes. It's nice to have you with us. Lots of interesting comments coming in this morning from all the people who are listening too. So if you've got something to say, you can do that on YouTube Live this morning. You can just drop us a comment there. You can also listen to the podcast on pretty much all of the podcast platforms. It's very, very exciting stuff. We've got some interesting people popping in a little bit later on this morning. But just in case you don't know, the interview I did with Dr. Tsepo Motsepe, who's South Africa's first lady. She's also patron of the Early Care Foundation. And she joins us at 8 o'clock to talk about the Early Care Foundation and her passion and her thoughts around the importance of early care for children. It's something that South Africa is not paying enough attention to. But the Early Care Foundation is an organization dedicated to increasing access to early childhood development, particularly in disadvantaged areas of South Africa, through upskilling women who can work in and teach in these creches, and also the support that they need to run these home-based creches. So the podcast is available. There will be a video of the interview on our YouTube channel and on our website from 8 o'clock this morning. Go and take a look at that. So a couple of things on Mbulelo's list of things we need to get into today. Apparently, some woman at the Biltong shop asked you if you were straight, which is hilarious because you know, someone said yesterday on social media, and I think I might have seen it on Twitter or Instagram, I can't remember, but somebody said, if you're transgender and you get misgendered, obviously that hurts your feelings, right? So if you're a transgender woman and someone calls you a man, that obviously makes you really cross. But it says underneath, try not being transgender and someone misgenders you. That's even worse. So what happened to you?
Yeah, it's like going to a lady just like, oh, those are awfully big hands. How long have you? Right. And like, no. My name's been Cindy my whole life.
Yes, exactly. She's not trans at all. Yeah, it's great.
But I walk in. Obviously, we've got our masks on, right?
Right.
So I walk into the Biltong, blah, blah, get my Biltong. And now, I'm in my nightmare because the lady's like chatty as well. You know me and service people that are chatty. I just think, oh my God, I just want to pay and get out of here. But anyway, so we start chatting and she starts chatting and she goes, I'm sorry to say this, but are you straight? First of all, she says, are you Zulu? Are you Zulu? I say, no, I'm Mxhosa. She goes, are you straight? So I say, yeah. She goes, so I'm sorry to ask you. It's just that, you know, and then she goes, you Xhosa guys, because her best friend is Xhosa and he's gay. And she's like, oh, you've got such a nice voice, but all of you Xhosas, you're all gay.
Wow.
Yes. How do you even respond to that?
That had never happened to me before. She's like, yeah, you've got such a nice voice, but you Xhosas, you and my best friend, you're all gay. I'm like, what are you talking about?
So what do you think is more offensive objectively? If you're a guy and you're straight and you get asked if you're gay, which isn't the most offensive thing in the world, but also if you're a woman and you're obese and someone says to you, are you pregnant? Or if you're pregnant and they ask you if you're obese, I mean, which one of those is worse? Because they all come from the same place, right?
Oh, have I got a story about that in primary school? Oh my God, this girl called Kim, right? This girl called Kim, I'll never forget her. Kim Childs, shout out to you wherever you are on planet Earth. Is she, for one of our teachers, she brought a present for her, like to congratulate her for being pregnant. And she wasn't. She was chunky. Man. Yeah.
That is terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
That was.
I don't know how
and
you
that was hectic because she gave it to her in front of the whole class. Like it wasn't one of those, you know how sometimes parents will bring it like after school. Yeah, in front. Like, ma'am, this is from my. And it was clear. It was like. Jeez. And she wasn't pregnant. So, that was brutal.
Did you just describe your teacher as chunky?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she was a considerable figure.
No, she had ample size.
Yeah, no, she was. Yeah, but that is.
I don't know that.
Objectively speaking, that's that one's worse, Gareth. That one's worse.
You think that's worse?
Being accused of being pregnant then, gay, whatever, you know?
I think these days, you know, if people, whether they think you're straight or gay, or they think you're trans or you're cisgendered, to me, the only people who that should matter to are the people you're actually having sex with. The rest of them, it's like, I don't see how that's relevant to our conversation. You work at the shop, the biltong shop, you know. It's like,
yeah, I don't,
just,
like,
just give me the biltong. It's like, you know, when your hairdresser starts asking you about your relationships, and you're like, I don't really feel the need to have to share, like, my ex with you while you're cutting my, just cut my hair. Like, I'm also not that keen to make small talk with anybody. It's just incredible. Like, people, but I do think it's like, it is true that these days people are far more relaxed about talking about these things, right? And it's not such a big deal. It used to be a much bigger deal, you know, back in the days when people, you could have been killed for being a cross-dresser. These days, obviously, there's a lot of change going on in that world.
Like Dari in the office, so we people may not know Dari because she's in the background, but she's one of our colleagues, and Dari thought I was gay when I came here, and she says,
oh, really?
I wasn't sure because, she says, because you're really into your things. And
things.
Like, I can't, things. I can't explain Dari better than just a younger version of Seinfeld's mom, you know, is Dari doesn't realize how funny she is, but she's so idiosyncratic.
Yeah.
You know, and I love her for it, and she is, and she's like, yeah, I thought you were gay when you came here, because you're really into your stuff, like, you know, with your coffee and your, I can't do Dari's voice, but
I still get that from people too. But you know what it is? It's also like if you're too conscientious, then some people read that as being, you know, either gay or like you're effeminate or whatever it is. Because, you know, most South African men are like a bull in a china shop. Everyone who isn't like that must be the opposite way. But there is also this confusion that people, I mean, if you're gonna judge people on their size in terms of their weight, or you're gonna judge them on their, what you perceive as their sexuality or their gender conformity, then we should also judge people on money and class, right? I mean, you do hear people who go, oh, I know that girl's definitely very rich because you could see by her bag or whatever it is, you know, and obviously there's certain things that are telltale signs. There's certain stuff that is Fong Kong as well, so you can't tell as much as you would have before. But you know how people are about this stuff. It's like, do you have a lot of money? Now, if someone asks you that question, I don't think there's a right answer to that. I bumped into someone yesterday who I've known for a long time, but she's not my favorite person. First thing she says to me is, hey, she calls me Cliff. Hey, Cliff, when are you going to give me some money? Like, she obviously means, can I have a job or whatever? Because she's a bit of a loser. So I was like, no, she really is. So I'm like, what? What kind of way is that to introduce yourself after I haven't seen you for like 3 years? That's how you're going to talk to me? Like, the last thing I want to do at that point is give you a job, let alone even be talking to you in a shop. Like, can't you just not, can we pretend this whole thing didn't happen? Because I actually respected you a little bit more before this.
Mm.
That happened yesterday.
Wow,
terrible.
Geez, man.
Some people are just not raised properly. They're raised by wolves.
Having said that, I mean, you make a lot of sense, but I do know when somebody has a lot of money, because generally they're a good-looking girl, and the new car that they drive is Fiat. Where their dad bought them a Fiat. Because I'm humble.
I'm sorry. I'm humble. You said they're good looking. I know lots of rich people are not good looking.
No. I'm talking about, there's a particular demographic who I do judge. I'm talking about, it's always the good looking, like, young zippy girl. Mm. And she's in a Fiat now. Because you remember they used to get the 1 Series or the Audi A3 back in the day. And now they go, I've got a Fiat because I'm humble. My dad wanted to buy me a BMW. Oh, but yeah, no.
Because I'm
that's
humble.
Too much.
If you're so humble, go and work for your own car, you know. That's not humility. Yeah.
So there's God for those monsters.
She needs to focus less on the drivors and more on the male vors. That's Michelle's bit of advice this morning.
Oh my gosh.
Jean says South African men associate efficiency with gayness. That's interesting. I don't know if that's true. The New Age movement and Oprah made it okay and even brave to talk about your public your private life publicly. Oh yeah, that's definitely a result of not just Oprah, but I'd say there's a whole lot of people in the the media business who've made that their thing. It makes them sound interesting. I've always thought...
But can I ask?
Yeah.
Can I ask? I think that's such a brilliant point because I'm unbelievably protective of my personal life. So, I mean, my family here and there, I'm happy to talk about. But I would never, even if I was dating somebody, I would never, ever, ever talk about it to anyone. And
you
I would never date
tell,
anybody.
You wouldn't tell the people on this show because we would turn it into material straight away, right?
Exactly. The savages. I wouldn't want the hounds coming for me.
Yeah.
But I take it to this level. I would never want to date somebody who'd want to put us as a couple on Instagram or anything like that. I don't like that kind of thing because for me, I've had that kind of partner. And I do have a question on the end of this, is that I've had the kind of partner who likes to display that I'm dating. I always think dating you is hard enough. I don't want to date the internet, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm very protective of my personal life. Do you think that's going, especially because of that Oprah kind of new age?
I think it's coming back again because people are now sick of hearing everyone else's personal stories. It's now there's a glut. There's too much. There's oversupply, under demand. Like, I'm not really that interested in 99% of people's private lives. They don't do anything for me, and I could care less. And I don't want to get involved in some conversation with a complete stranger about, you know, what their preferences are or who they last were dating or where they went on their honeymoon. Not interesting to me at all. And I don't think I'm in the minority because those people are a dime a dozen. They're all walking around saying, do you want to hear about my private life? And the answer is no, quite honestly. There's just nothing about that I'm interested in. What do you think, Weza?
Yeah, it's quite an interesting dilemma. And just the whole thing of privacy versus, you know, being out there and being public. I think what we've gotten used to is, public figures need to be public. That's why it's called public figures. And people feel like they have the right to know Gareth Cliffe's love life, Gareth Cliffe's pet life, and everything just about you know. So they go around searching for it, digging for it. Like they're like, is Gareth Cliffe gay? Who's Gareth Cliffe dating? What's going on?
Yeah.
With anything and everybody, you know. So as soon as I started, you know, being more on TV and stuff, when I search my name on Google, it pops up like what people often search next to my name.
Right.
You know, things like net worth, things like girlfriend or wife or whatever. Because
net worth, that's a funny one.
Yeah.
It's like, how do they even figure that? Because you can look up almost anyone's net worth on the internet and it's always wrong. It's always wrong because you have no idea. I mean, not even your bank knows what you're worth because you might have other accounts with other banks. You know, you might have investments, or you might have huge liabilities somewhere. You might have family that you pay a huge amount of money for every month. So nobody knows this stuff for sure.
That's true. I don't know where people actually get these things from, and I think they're usually overinflated. Just so that people can click and read and whatever. It becomes clickbait because, I mean, there was this list of richest people in South Africa and it would claim like Vusi Tembekwayo has billions along with a couple of other people who are billionaires. And you're thinking, billion? Really?
It's a lot of money.
Is that real?
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is also, you can always tell a couple are in trouble when they start doing photo shoots together.
Oh yeah.
This is absolute. Like the moment you see a couple of people, and I don't have a lot of friends who would do this, so I've seen it maybe two or three times in my entire life, but every single one of those two or three times that they start doing a photo shoot together, you just know tick tock on this relationship. It's coming to an abrupt end very soon.
And what happened to private life? Like, it's hard enough to raise a child. It's hard enough, Gareth. Friendships are hard, you know.
So,
is what happened to keeping, like, imagine you and I need to borrow you money now, and now people are inside of that as well.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
You also see that. You see people, like, outing their friends who owe them money on social media because those friends are such shitheads that they won't pay them back for money that they owe them. Now, I mean, thank God the internet has allowed us to do a couple of things and hold some people accountable. But I just don't understand how, like, you're so you know, even if someone owes you money, it's got so bad that you need to go on social media in order to get your money out of them. It's just, it's so tacky. And then everybody knows that they've been owned. You know, it's like, it just, it's bad for everyone. I find it interesting because I spoke to someone who's really smart about this once. And she said to me, there's a difference between being personal and being private. And the distinction is massively important, whether you're a public figure or not. Like, there's information which you can share with people that's personal. In other words, I can tell you a story about how, you know, I just recently lost a friend and how that might have felt for me. And that's personal. I'm letting you into my personal world and I'm sharing stuff with you. But I don't have to mention her name because that's private. And then I'm suddenly involving her family or I'm involving, you know, people who didn't know perhaps that she'd gone or whatever else. So you've got to be careful how much you put out there, because if you share everything, it makes those private things worthless. Then it's everybody's information. Like, you know, like you said just now, you're dating the whole internet instead of just dating the person that you're dating. And also, you should really ask permission for those people. You know, it's like you're not allowed to make a recording of somebody without their permission, right? You're not allowed. It's illegal. But you're also not allowed to talk to someone in the press, let's say, or these days it just means social media. You can't go and publicize something without that person's permission if you care about them. If you stop caring about them, fine, then all bets are off. It's just interesting to me that so many people have no regard for that stuff, and therefore what they end up doing is devaluing the relationships that are close to them. I would never tell you important personal details about my sister or my aunt or any of that stuff without their permission, because I don't think that that's right.
I mean, but what about a real example here, Wesner? You're a married man. It's like, you know, it's hard enough being married. Is now we live in a different world where everybody thinks their opinion matters. So imagine now your wife and you on Instagram. You know, people are going to start commenting on your wife, and people start commenting about you. And now they're in your marriage in the most insidious of ways. I'd just like to know, what are your thoughts on that? I think it's such a dark space, and I'm a very pragmatic person by nature, so maybe I'm too concerned.
No, very right. Look, I live basically on the same on the same principles. Like, there's personal and then there's private, you know. So I also try to make sure that, you know, even while we were dating, I didn't make that a social media thing. You know, it doesn't have to be, because then when you gain a little bit of weight, everyone's going to say you gained weight. When this has happened, everyone's going to say.
Right.
And then eventually that creates a lot of strain. I mean,
huge.
Look at a public example that happened like this past month is Kanye Bao and her partner or ex-partner. You know, I don't know if you saw the whole situation, but apparently – you know, he's been claiming that I've done so much for her. I've bought this. I've bought that. I've done so much for her. And right now she's nowhere to be found. She said she's going to the salon and it's 1 a.m. and she's still not here. Let me go look for her. So he's literally giving us a blow by blow saying, and then I went and then she's still not nowhere and it's 2 a.m. and I haven't slept and she's still nowhere to be found. And stuff like that.
Jeez.
And it turns out she left him, but without saying that, hey, let's call it quits.
Wow.
She's
now it's everybody's
somewhere.
Story. Now everybody
now
knows.
It's everyone's story. Now he's going on to the lives and crying and saying, baby, come back. I love you. Oh my goodness.
What?
Guys, it's
pathetic.
It's too much.
That is
this
so
could
sad.
Have been handled privately.
Jesus.
We wouldn't have known. It wouldn't have been this embarrassing for him.
Ugh.
Like, who, you know, what does this mean for him in his business life and in other space, you know, outside
That's horrible.
Of just this? Yeah.
That's really horrible.
Good God.
Yeah. See, this is like a soap opera, but not a good soap opera. A bad soap opera.
No. Is it the Telemundo? What are those badly dubbed South American ones?
Yeah.
Like those ones.
The telenovelas.
Telenovela, sorry.
Yeah.
Telenovela, this one. Yeah.
Well, and Weza, just to finish off, you know, when people do comment about your partner, let's just say, she's, you know, looking a little round or whatever. 6 months later, you're having real problems, and people, and it's like, we knew they were going to break up. It's like they're eating away at the essence of your relationship. You know what I'm saying?
They're putting bets on how long you're going to last, and saying, and I'll give them 6 months.
Here's the even worse thing about all of that, because those people don't really care. They're not that interested. It's just something for them to talk about. And so they can feel a little bit superior for a day about how their life isn't falling apart like yours is. It comes from such a dark and pathetic and small-minded place. You know, it's never – like you're never going to hear the most important people in the world, like your, you know, Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk. You're not going to hear them talking about other people's relationships falling apart. We'll hear about theirs, you know, like Jeff got divorced from Mackenzie and – Elon is on to wife number 7 or whatever it is. So we'll be talking about them because we're small people. But I promise you, they're not going on the internet and looking for, where's Matumani? Let's see what happens with him and his wife. Or let's see who Bulelo's last girlfriend was. I promise you they don't care. And there's no one more important than them who they're interested in the relationship of. That's absolutely for sure. So you know straight away what kind of people you're dealing with when they're more interested in those minute details of other people's lives than they are in their own. You know exactly what you're doing. I mean, as much
sometimes it comes from I don't know. Is it an envy thing where it's like, yo, Gareth is doing so well. Last time I saw him with a yellow Bentley and stuff. Mm. I wonder, geez. But I'm sure he can't have it all. I'm sure there's something that's not good.
Because it's called. I mean, the Germans figured this out years ago. Schadenfreude. And Schadenfreude is basically this thing where you take pleasure in other people's misery because it makes you feel, for an instant, superior or better. So, for example, it could have to do with money. It could have to do with relationships. It could even be to do with health. You know, we're going through a pandemic, and what happens with a lot of people is they go, oh, my God, did you hear? Bulelo is so sick with COVID. It's so terrible. Bulelo, I think he's going to die in hospital because he's got the COVID. And it's the same motivation as all the other kinds of Schadenfreude, because what it is like, I'm healthy, lucky me, I feel better about my life. There's someone who's much worse off than I am, and I'm deriving some kind of sick pleasure from the fact that I'm better off than him because I've never liked him or because I'm jealous of him or because I think about him more than he thinks about me. That's kind of where it comes from.
Yeah, actually, I have an exact example of that. Like, you know, I live very close to Stain City, and so it's easy to have a conversation that says, wow, have you seen Stain City? Yo, Dow Stain is like really done well.
How did that become the address? Because I hear people, I met a girl about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and she was telling me all about, I've moved into Stain City and Stain City this and Stain City that. Stain City. She talked about it a lot, right? And she's a very pleasant human being. She's not an irritating person at all. But I had no idea that Stain City had such cachet and that it was such a great place to live.
Stain City.
Yeah.
It's really because of the giant palace that's being built there, like over 100 million or something.
Yeah, that's Doe's house, right?
Yeah. So obviously, because of that, and that, oh man, he's done so well for himself. The person then who was speaking to me felt necessary for him to say, yeah, but apparently he's not doing well. Hey, like he's very sick. Yeah.
Oh,
so obviously that's exactly the thing. Like you're trying to say, wow, look at this highlight of this person. Look at how great they're doing. And then the person is like, yeah, well, at least I feel better about myself because though I don't have the money, but I have all this amazing health.
Yeah. It's true. Humans are so small-minded. They really are. And we live in this little ant farm. And you think about how this ant is jealous of that ant because they got a little piece more straw than they, you know, than they have. It's pathetic. If you do not have a personal life, which is private, then you have absolutely nothing to offer anyone in a relationship except the surface appearance performances. That's a good point from Michael. There are people who like watching the drama and the soap opera on social media. Sure, but there are lots of TV programs that you could watch as well. There's something kind of – the word is prurience, right? P-R-U-R-I-E-N-C-E.
Yeah.
R-I-E-N-C.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So that's the word.
Great word there, Gareth. Hey, Gareth, also, but I do need to mention at this point, in the interest of self-accountability, I don't give a damn about celebrities who are on social media and open this door and then cry at the end.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm sorry. I will not give them – I won't. And we must stop doing that. Like, oh, sorry, guys, you should protect her at all costs. No, if you're going to use social media to become the celebrity couple, deal with the sharp end because people are mean.
Andre says, this is interesting, Weza. Weza, you were in my high school, and I think probably my mom that was a teacher liked you more than myself in school. So his mom, Andre's mom preferred you to her own son. That's hilarious. Very proud of you, and congrats on your success. That's nice.
Wow, thank you so much, Andre. Yeah, Mrs. Lowe was like the one, eh?
Okay, awesome. Just on this issue of Stain City, I love the fact that someone brought up in the comments just now, yeah, you know, all these people look at Doe Stain's huge big house, and he built this enormous house, which I've actually been to visit once or twice. And we've had Carolyn on the show a couple of times as well. But it is a hugely impressive. It's probably the biggest house in South Africa. But just because you live in the neighborhood in a tiny little one-bedroom flat doesn't mean that you're as important as him in his house, right? That's what someone was saying in the comments. Have you noticed the insane schadenfreude with people gloating over someone who's ill or died because they refused the jab? Yeah, I'm starting to see that, Angus. Angus just pointing out that that's something that's happening. You know, these people who they feel like they're really special because they've had the COVID vaccine. And then when someone who doesn't have the vaccine dies, they almost take glee in it. And that to me would be, that's a very disturbing, very disturbing.
Although both sides are dickheads. Because there's also the, hey, people with the jab are dying. You know what I mean? There is just broad spread Freude across the board.
To be frank, though, I've seen that on social media. I haven't really seen it in real life. I haven't actually met anyone in my life who's like, oh, this person died because they didn't get the vaccine. Ha, ha, ha. I haven't seen that in real life. And on social media, people are much nastier than they would be in real life, too. You know, they think they can get away with it. So behave like idiots. Yeah. All right, let's turn our attention to something cool. Now, you know, we've got a lot going on in this country, and a lot of the stuff that happens in South Africa is as a result of people just trying to hustle to get their act together, to be able to make a difference in society, to be able to earn a living. And I've got two people who have written a book that's called Wendy Needs to Hustle. And I'll introduce them to you in a second. But it's the story of Wendy, who lost her job due to what's happening in the world, obviously COVID, the lockdowns, all of that stuff. As a result, she finds herself with no income, no hope of being employed anytime soon. And this is the story for a lot of people in South Africa. The book is written by 13 different authors, and it's all about small business. Their shared vision is to provide you with a book that will guide you in your journey to start your own business, whether that is for you or for someone else that you know. In addition, they share some expert knowledge as professionals in their fields, and they talk about the mistakes that they made and the tips that they have for not falling into the same traps. So the book is available across the world, will also be available in all languages. There are English and Afrikaans versions for the moment, and it's available on Amazon and at Christine's website, which is christinestein.com. So Christine is currently the president of the BNI, which is the Business Network International chapter in Midrand. Hey, Christine, how are you?
Good morning. I'm well, and how are you?
Good. Nice to see you. And you're one of the small business owners who takes networking very seriously. You guys meet on a weekly basis to create business for each other. And you've actually gone ahead as an entrepreneur and a professional coach since then. We're also joined by Colin Mtunu. Hello, Colin. How are you?
Good morning, Gareth. How are you doing?
Good. Nice to see you. I see you've got the book up there behind you on your shelf. Hold one of those up for us so we can have a good look at it. There we go.
Yeah, we go.
There we are. That's it. So, Colin, you are a short-term insurance broker. You've been in the industry for 21 years, and you helped to co-author the book along with some other people. So let's start with you, Colin. Why this book now, and explain how you all got together and decided to write it?
So, yeah, Gareth, many reasons. Obviously, thanks, first of all, for being on your show and to your listeners. Yeah, the book is really brought up, you know, by all these, you know, pandemic issues that we've experienced. Mm-hmm. And over and above that, we know, obviously, in South Africa, the unemployment rate, you know, has been climbing for a long time now. And, yeah, as small business owners, we really just put our minds together, obviously, a special invite by Christine, first of all, to all of us 13 authors, mm-hmm. Where she shared her dream and a vision with us. And it was all up to us to really put our minds together and our words, of course, in the book, and see how best we can appeal to everyone out there in South Africa, you know, just to say everyone can do it. If you cannot have a job, there's certainly something you can do, and you can certainly approach us. We are here to help.
So, Christine, tell us quickly about how you chose who these people were, or did they choose you? How did it all come together? Christine, can you hear us?
Oh, we'll see if we can get Gareth back now.
I was trying to ask a question, and I was wondering why you guys couldn't hear me. But I was saying, Christine, can you tell us how you managed to get people together? Did they choose you? Did you choose them? Did it all just happen? How did it all actually fall into place?
Gareth, I think the worst thing you can do on New Year's morning is to drink your first cup of coffee, because you get huge ideas. Uh-huh. So I was thinking on New Year's morning, you know, what is it that I can do to help the people in the country that's now, you know, we are stuck. We have millions of jobless people. And then the idea came into my mind, so what do we have and what can we do about it? And then I approached the 12 other authors, mm-hmm. and I asked them if they would be interested in this project, you know, to see what we can produce and see if it is of any help, of any value to anybody. And they all agreed with no objections. And, yeah, 6 months, 9 months later, the book is here.
All right, so how does it work? You've got different chapters, and you tell the story of this Wendy. How do you manage to thread everyone's various roles or bits of writing into a cogent story? Who had that job? Is that you?
That is me, and it was quite a bit of a complex project, I must say. But the first thing I want to point out is that we didn't want to write a textbook. There's enough textbooks out there talking about entrepreneurship and how to start your own business. This is a story. It's a storytelling. So I took everybody's stuff that they gave me, like Colin said, you know, Wendy, you need to remember the following things when you think of insurance. And I wrote it in a way that Wendy came and she had an interview and a meeting with Colin, mm-hmm. and she asked him a few questions. You know, I'm a new person. I don't know what I'm doing. Please tell me what I need to think of when it comes to insurance. And likewise with the attorneys, their sales coach, myself as a coach. And every now and then I put in a coaching session as well for Wendy. And yeah, it's a bit of a chapter based, and every chapter has a topic and a theme.
And how did you come up with these common themes? Because I'm sure there are common themes that everybody can relate to, because the whole point of this book isn't just to tell another story. There are lots of stories out there, and this one would be fictitious, but it's to help people with lessons that they can learn that can put them in a position where they can start their own business, they can find a job where they can make a difference. How does that work? And Colin, what was your part in that?
Okay. Well, basically, I think, Gareth, it's all about sharing our stories of how we started our own businesses, our mm-hmm. own small businesses. And in so doing, we wanted to make it as realistic as possible. Even though the book is about Wendy, it's also about us. It's also about our small businesses, how we started, how we struggled, and you know, all the challenge that we met along the way. And basically saying to people, this is us, we have done it. It's not easy, but, you know, with the right approach and with the right mindset and obviously the guidance.
Tell us your story. I mean, like, what is your elevator pitch? You were in insurance for 21 years. What have you done since then? And tell us about your own entrepreneurial journey. That's interesting.
All right. So basically, I started as a claims adjuster at Mutual and Federal back in the year 2000. And from then onwards, I worked for some big players out there. I'm not going to mention all the names, but I've been around and grown in the role of being in insurance in multiple titles, really. You know, having been a third-party claims manager to being a regional manager at a as I mentioned, I'm not too sure if I'm at liberty to mention names, but
sure,
yeah, I've been a regional manager. I've looked after people, lots of people, especially in the Joburg area. And I last year, 2020, which at the point, you know, seemed like a very, very weird idea, I decided to leave the corporate world and seek a journey of my own, you know, where I could start and cultivate my own legacy. That's when I joined AdviceCube, the company I'm with at the moment, as the head of short-term insurance. And 3 months later, believe it or not, COVID arrived. And I was sitting and thinking to myself, what have I done? You know, I looked at my wife and she said, well, look, we're in it now. We might as well run with it and see what comes out of it. It is your dream and I'm here to support you in all ways possible. And that's how it started. 3 months later, I was introduced to BNI by one of the executives within AdviceCube. I met Christine and the team of about 23 entrepreneurs at the time. For the first time, it was a Thursday morning, and I never looked back because to me, it made so much sense to all of a sudden have 23 people around the room that have their own businesses that I can talk to, and they can share their business ideas with me. And besides that, help me grow. Gareth, I've never had to call ever since I joined BNI and I joined these great people.
You know, because the great lesson here is also collaboration, right? I mean, this is where it's great to have someone like Christine who pulls people together, and you can all learn from each other, rely on each other, share advice, share life stories. I mean, it's almost like a support group with none of the negatives. I mean, Thurence Cameron here says, I'm super proud. It's great to see Colin on this platform. He used to be my manager. How's that? So,
wow.
You've got people who used to work with you.
I remember her, actually. I do remember her, actually.
Layla says, Colin, we wish you all the best. May you grow from strength to strength from the Nikers. So there are lots of people who know you here who've joined in the conversation this morning. So, Christine, So what's the idea with the book now? We're going to try and sell it, and can people get it from christinestain.com or from Amazon? Is that correct?
That's it. My main focus is, at the moment, those school teachers, heads of departments, ministers, pastors, people who have a community that they support where people are jobless, to buy 10, 20, 50, 100 or 1,000 books and distribute it to those people. Sometimes, and that's something that we need help with, because we're not exactly sure exactly where those people are. And if the people in those communities can reach out to us, so that we can distribute this book to as many people as we possibly can.
I like it. All right. So it's called Wendy Needs to Hustle, and two of the authors are with us this morning, Colin Mkunu and Christine Stain, who both have written parts of it. Christine threaded it all together. Well done, guys. This is great, and I wish you only the best of luck. We need to get South Africa working again. We need more entrepreneurs, small business owners, people with big ideas. So let's go for it. I love it. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Good to have you on
for the platform.
No problem at all.
Really appreciate it.
Good to see you, Colin, and thank you, Christine. That's the book, Wendy Needs to Hustle, and you can get, there are two different versions of it. There's the Afrikaans one, Wouter Moet Wikkel, and Wendy Needs to Hustle is the English version, and they will be in other languages soon as well. So that's great, and it's a small book that can get you through some tough times, especially if you've just lost your job and you're not sure what to do, you're not sure where to go, you're not sure what's happening in the world. You can find out by taking a look at this. I just love that people are coming up with creative ideas around what's otherwise a very difficult situation, right?
Yeah, and I mean, the other really cool thing, just touching back on voiceovers, is that voiceovers is also growing in this space, which is audiobooks, you know. So Wendy Needs to Hustle is something that could have also been put into different languages audibly as well, because these days we would rather listen sometimes than read because of how busy the schedule is. I mean, that's why podcasting is working so well as well, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I do a lot of audiobooks because then you can do other things while you're busy listening. So I can be, you know, tidying up around the house. I can go for a walk. I can do some exercise, whatever it is, and I can also at the same time improve the mind.
Yeah, maybe that's an extra chapter in the Wendy Needs to Hustle. Like, how can Wendy hustle with her voice? And Voter met
say Vickle him. Yeah, I was like,
on Vickle.
There we go.
Well, I didn't believe you until now when you said you did your internship at Sasol, but now I can see Afrikaans came out. Because what do you call it?
Everything. I did my primary and my high school I did in Afrikaans. So Afrikaans was my first language.
Really?
It's crazy. Yeah.
You grew up in Secunda. Where was this?
In Van der Bijl Park.
Oh, right. In the Vaal Triangle. Vaal Triangle.
Yeah.
Listen.
In the Vaal Triangle.
Van der Bijl Park, Secunda, you've chosen all the most beautiful places in South Africa to be involved. Jesus.
So that's why I couldn't do Secunda because I knew what I was getting myself into. Right. It was just going to be another small mining town.
Yeah.
And I had bigger.
Full of pollution.
You can see what you're breathing in. You can see it.
Yeah.
You don't breathe there, you breathe.
Brief.
What you're breathing in.
Sometimes when you blow your nose in Secunda or Van der Bijl Park, it's all the stuff that comes out is just tar, actually. You're a chemical engineer. You turn your body into a fractionating column.
Oh, wow.
That's what it is. Oh my God. All right, coming up in a little while, we've got the First Lady of South Africa. She never does interviews. I'm very lucky that I got to sit down and talk to her about something. It's not a biography. I don't want to promise you that you're going to find out all about her personal life. She's not that kind of person. We were just talking about privacy and what people share. And she's very much disinterested in having attention, you know, for attention's sake. She's the kind of person who gets on with her life. She's got important things to do. She is a medical doctor by training. And so she's no slouch in that respect. She's one of those people who was already important before she married her husband. And she was already successful before she had to rely on any connections, and I don't think she ever has. But she talks very openly and honestly about the one thing that she's really passionate about, which is early care for children in South Africa, particularly in disadvantaged areas. And that's mostly what the interview is about. So I don't want you to think you're going to suddenly find out, you know, what the First Lady thinks of politics. She never talks politics. She's not that interested in it, frankly. So she'll be joining us at 8 o'clock this morning, which is bound to be good. Lots of people loving the book that we spoke to Christine and to Colin about. So if you want to, why not start your own if you want to do that? It's really great. It's good to see so many people doing so many interesting things. Well, Wezo, we've kind of gone everywhere this morning. It's been a busy reunion for us to catch up with you, and I hope things are going well. What are you up to at the moment? Tell us what you're actually doing right now.
Okay, so a number of things. One of them is within the voiceover space. I've got a online training too now. So I train people remotely, you know, so I've got people I'm training outside of the country. I recently created a course called How to Charge, you know, just so that people can actually know how to actually charge, because so many guys are just taking whatever cents are put on the table and not quite knowing that there are rate cards out there and how to actually use them, because they can be so confusing too.
Give us some advice here. What should I charge for a voiceover if someone says to me, we want you to do our ad? Give me a ballpark figure here.
Great. So the first question you're going to ask is, how long is it going to be used for, and where is it going to be used? Because those things matter. Mm-hmm. So just because it's 30 seconds of your voice doesn't mean that it's just 30 seconds. Come on.
Okay.
No. 30 seconds of how long is the company going to benefit from this thing? So let's say it's going to be used for 1 year, and it's going to be used on TV. So if it's going to be used on TV for 1 year, that's 9,760 rand. That's it.
Boom.
And if it's going to be used on TV and on radio, well, then the radio is going to have its own fee. The TV is going to have its own fee. So, and so it goes. So the more places or platforms it's going to be used on and the longer it's going to be used, the price also changes based on that as well.
And if you do something like an audio book, are you paid by the number of hours that you sit in the studio and record?
No, not actually. You're paid more on how much material this is. And and also, again, is it going to be distributed for free or is it going to be sold? Because you could do an audiobook and it's going to be given for free to blind people to help them as aid, you know.
Right.
But you could have, yeah, but you also could be doing it and it's going to be sold for a lot of money. So if it's going to be sold, you're going to, so there's first something called a recording fee. And then there's a usage fee. So the recording fee is calculated to say, if it is, let's say, let me just try to figure out a way to calculate that for you. So you calculate it per 5 minutes of finished audio, like of recorded audio, 5 or 10 minutes of that. So what I mean is, it doesn't matter how many mistakes you make, because that's the catch, right? If you say, no, I'll charge you per hour in the studio, and then you deliberately make a bunch of mistakes, now you out there longer in the studio, obviously the client is going to get sour-faced and thinking, get it, he's shiring me.
Yeah.
He's making mistakes on peppers.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't want that. So,
It's like those contractors you ask to come and build your house, and then they take an extra month just because they don't want to extract another month of salary. Yeah,
exactly.
Could have finished it last week. I got you. Yeah, son of a bitch.
So to make it fair, it is about how long is the finished and recorded audio. So let's say the book was 10 hours long. Well, then you're going to say the first 10 minutes is charged at, let's say, 3,500. And then every 10 minutes thereafter, you add a certain amount of money. And then that is the recording fee.
It's complicated.
And then for the,
this is,
yeah,
this
yeah,
is really,
that's,
so
that's
I don't wanna,
the thing.
I don't want to get into the reads on this, but like, this is why you probably need to really know what you're doing, because you could be taken advantage of and people will overcharge, undercharge or whatever. And it's hard to figure out price. It's like any business, right? Pricing is such a complicated thing. Like even if you're charging for a product, let's say you sell, I don't know, tea bags. And if you don't get your price exactly right, then the market's going to decide that you're too expensive or that you're too cheap. And the people who think you're too expensive are not going to spend their money on you. And the people who think you're too cheap are going to be suspicious that the quality of what you're selling isn't very good. So you're screwed either way. And there isn't really a perfect number, right, for anything in business. That's hard.
Yeah. And then you also get a bunch of bottom feeders who like the guys who don't know what to charge.
Who
they like
undercut,
the guys.
They undercut just, everybody, right?
Exactly. So they're like, you know, we're still starting. How about we build a relationship? But they do that with everyone. And as soon as you get too smart, then they move on to the next guy.
Right.
And say, we are starting out. We're building a relationship. Mm. So they keep on building these fake relationships, just
right.
trying to undercut and every single person. So that's why I made the course, you know, how to charge, because if you do know how to charge, at least you can take it on as a business and actually do well with voiceovers, because you can. You can make a living speaking, and
I
that's
mean,
what I do.
So Tracy says here, same in my industry, which is photography, birth photography. Wow, that's very specific.
Birth photography?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jeez.
Some people like that.
So
eh?
She's there in the room
while
the kid's being born.
Yep.
And, oh, man, that's a graphic image.
Uh-huh.
Yo.
She says, I can't charge an hourly rate for a natural birth. It puts too much pressure on the mom to get the baby out. Wow.
That's good stuff. Hey, Weza, I just wanted to ask you, is there any stuff you would never voice over? Because I have, I got approached where I do have a little bit of a dilemma. I mean, I don't need to tell you what my dilemma is, but is there any stuff like if the church of, I don't know, Satan spawn came to you, or I don't know, I don't know where your threshold would be, but is there anything where no matter how good the money is, you wouldn't use your voice for it, or you're just like, hey, I mean, especially now you are married, that is going to come with a situation where the bathroom now obviously needs gold taps or whatever.
You know what? I think it is important to have those type of boundaries, just like with any business. You know, if there's something in your conscience that bothers you with doing that particular job, then you know you shouldn't have to do it just because you feel like you have to do it. So yeah, for me it's the same thing, you know. So if there is something that I feel like this bothers my conscience, or it's maybe going to be in competition with another client who I'm already doing things for, you know, I can, you know, respectfully decline those type of things. But because I also train many voice artists and mentor them, I normally have referral type of things as well, where I get other guys' gigs that I think maybe they would not mind doing.
I like this yes. question of like, what won't you do? Would you have, so you'd have moral objections to the Church of Satan? Like if they, this is the Church of Satan. That's why come and join our church.
So for instance, right, in the very, very beginning, before I was even a big voiceover artist, there's someone who approached me saying, hey, your Afrikaans is so good. We can, we have this business where we fake people being able to connect with their ancestors and stuff.
My
so
God.
We have Afrikaner clients who would, you know, pay big bucks, like 15,000 rand if they could speak to their, you know, to... So this Nigerian guy was literally saying to me, look, we can do this, man. You'll make big bucks. You'll drive a GTI like me. And I was poor at the time. So it was good business. I was like, shucks, I could make money. All I have to do is say, hello, Pretorius. This your pa, you know, or something
God.
Like that.
Wow.
And I thought, no, I can't do this. I can't do this. With great power comes great responsibility. And this is what they meant on Spider-Man.
I love that there's a bunch of Nigerians who are making money out of people who want to reconnect with their dead ancestors. That is hilarious. God, people are ridiculous, aren't they? It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. So you would palm off any connection to Satan onto one of your mentees who believes in Satan.
Pass it on to you, Bolelo. That's who. Yeah, all right, listen, guys, it's fun, but now we're at the end. We've got to wrap this up. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Wes, great to chat to you again, catch up with you and see what you're up to. And we'll speak to everybody tomorrow. Have a great day. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Job.
Oh, well, by the way, the first lady coming up in a second, so you want to stick around for that in case you haven't seen it and in case you want to see what it was all about. It was a really fun interview. She's terrific. I think you're going to like her a lot. So that's coming up next. This is CliffCentral.com. When we think about the future, we need to think about the children. Did you know that the first 1,000 days of a child's life are critical in shaping the future? With the devastating impact of the coronavirus pandemic and the subsequent lockdowns, thousands of early care practitioners and parents have lost their jobs, which means that thousands of children in vulnerable communities have lost their access to safe, educational early care facilities and associated daily nutrition. How can we help? The Early Care Foundation, an organization I've had a long association with, has launched the No One Left Behind campaign for us to help get children back to school. And it's my honor to introduce our First Lady and patron of the Early Care Foundation, Dr. Tsepo Motsepe. It is a great pleasure to welcome you, Dr. Motsepe. Very nice to see you.
Thank you very much, Gareth. And it's true, you've supported us. You've gone with us to events in Soweto at the Lindo Auditorium, and you've been very, very supportive, mostly in raising funds. In the past, it was when we didn't have the pandemic, when the economy was not challenged like it is, and it's very true. The practitioners who run the early childhood development centers have also been affected. You know, these ladies and men who run their backyard crèches, either in the garage, in their houses, or in a container, have also suffered in their businesses because the parents could not afford to bring the children. to the crèches. Now, as far as the children are concerned, you did say it already. This is the place where most of the children, 4.5 million children in South Africa, depend on the first, the only nutritional meal that they receive from the crèches. So, during the pandemic, because parents couldn't pay, children couldn't go to the crèches, and they were deprived of the stimulation that you've also said. It's so important, you know, that the children...
Critical.
It's very, very critical. It doesn't just start in, during the first 1,000 days, as you've also said. It is from inception that the mother eats well so that the cognitive development, you know, the child's brain and development depend a lot on the nutrition that they receive. Apart from that, these early childhood development centers where the children go to are actually mandated by the law. You know, the law says that the Department of Basic Education says that before children go to grade zero, they have to be exposed to early childhood development. Now, we in the Early Care Foundation, we make sure that the children are in a safe, secure, stimulating environment. Safe as in sometimes the parents under normal circumstances are at work, the child is in a safe place.
Unsupervised?
Of course, unsupervised. The children receive meals, they are stimulated, they are taught.
But what I'm saying, is that the kids often, if they don't have these facilities, find themselves unsupervised. Both parents might be working. They might even be in child-headed households. Yes. We know the social problems we have in this country.
Especially in the most disadvantaged communities, where we have to make sure that as we rise, we make sure that the whole community rises. I was going to say that, you know, the ladies and the practitioners who run these crèches, we in the Early Care Foundation, we make sure that we train them. We have courses that are accredited. We've developed courses that are accredited with the sector education and training sector to make sure that the ladies who look after the children are not just childminders.
Right.
They do it with knowledge. They are professionals. And we also remind them that apart from being a place of education, they are running a business. And we try as much as possible to ensure the financial sustainability of the business.
Dr. Motsepe, you are a medical doctor.
Yes,
by training.
I am.
So
I
you're
am.
Not just speaking about this in a theoretical sense. You know what you're talking about. You specialized actually in some maternal care and age care and that kind of thing. So out of all the things that you've spent the many years, you know, before your life did become a little more political, not that you're a political person, but you've spent a lot of time dealing with this. Why is it so close to your heart?
Why is it so close to my heart? Well, I wouldn't know. When I did my master's, it was in maternal child health and aging. And I got exposed to studies of children in different communities where there was good nutrition within the same society. You know, children who were just divided by a road. Those are the real scientific studies that were done where you find that even the diameter of the skull in the child who is well nourished from the during the first 1,000 days of birth is better developed than the child who's malnourished. And making sure that the children receive proper nutrition and, of course, stimulation during the first 1,000 days of their life, we make... You know, it's possible for them to reach their full potential.
It's almost like a hardware versus a software problem. If those kids don't receive the nutrition and the care and the stimulation at that early age, then it almost makes it harder for them when the education stuff starts to kick in to be able to absorb these things, right?
Gareth,
so you're setting them back.
Gareth, you've been to some of our crèches.
Yes.
And you've seen how well nourished those children are.
Yes.
How well nourished and how curious they are. You spend time, even when we've had Nelson Mandela, I think there was one Nelson Mandela day where you came and helped with whatever it was, you know, making sure that the environment.
For some of these children, that might be their only good meal that day.
Yes. You've seen how well nourished those children are. And you've also seen the facilities that we try and promote, that the children, you know, that the creches are well resourced.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, they've got to have everything that makes it possible for the children to be like the children in other
more privileged
societies. Yes.
I'm always blown away by the difference that it makes to kids if they do get this early on. And I think that it's probably the best chance we have in South Africa of having a generation of people who can really excel and who can compete with the rest of the world. Because if you arrive at school and the first thing for you is to think about how hungry you are, it's very difficult to learn. And as for the resources that are provided there in terms of education and entertaining the children and allowing them to play in a place that's safe, where there aren't dangerous adults on the street. You know, we also know that there are very nasty things that happen to children if they're left alone without adult supervision, and particularly without responsible adult supervision. So this is essential. Tell me a little bit about these practitioners, because I think they deserve a lot of the credit, and you also provide a huge amount of support to them.
Yes, the program that we run is really like an incubation program, in that apart from exposing them to the, you know, giving them these accredited courses that are accredited with the Sector Education and Training Authority, we also ensure the financial sustainability. You know, most of the training that these ladies, they come, they themselves do not have, are not well qualified. So we've got to make sure that the material that we use, like the textbooks, are in animation, are in animated form. They are drawings.
Right.
To make sure that they understand the message. So most of our textbooks are like comic books, and they explain everything that the ladies have to get from the courses. We have trainers. We normally make sure that we have about 20 creches that are in close proximity, and our trainer goes from one creche to another. Once a week, they go to the facility itself and work with a practitioner to make sure that everything at the creche is all right. And then once a week, all the ladies who belong to the forum, they are normally not more than 20. They go either to a hall or to a place where they get their lectures. And some of the lectures are in acting form. They actually perform some of their lectures to make sure that the message stays with them and they understand it completely. We help them we make sure that they comply. You know, the regulations that are based by the Department of Education are very tough. They have to comply with 6 government departments. On their own, they wouldn't. And once they do comply with the departments, then they receive a grant from Department of Social Development, which is 17 rand per child per day, which amounts to 374 rand a month per child.
It's not a huge amount of money.
Well, you know, we do not discourage the practitioners from also making the parents pay. Because most of the time, the parents pay with the money from the grant.
Yes.
And they cannot afford, most of the time, they can't afford more than 100 rand.
And this 90 is also, rand. This is also where the Early Care Foundation helps, because you are raising funds all the time.
Yes, we raise funds.
For many of these creches across the
country. We do raise funds continuously. We do raise funds continuously. And as I said, it's for the resources.
Yeah.
And also to make sure that the business is sustainable. Now, once the children, you know, most of the time when we come to new creches, you find 90 children in a container. The practitioner takes as many children as possible so that they have an income.
Sure.
But once they comply, where the department says each child has to have a space of 2.2 square meters per child, they can reduce the number of children they take because they know that they will receive a grant from the government. And at least it doesn't affect their income. Another good thing is that they become employers, and that also has an impact on the unemployment problem that we have in our country.
So we're solving a number of problems here all at once. And I think the Early Care Foundation has done incredible work. It must be quite gratifying to see, even though I've known you long enough to know that you're not the kind of person who takes personal joy and pride in these things. You like to see that that good is being done.
Well,
it must be gratifying to know that you've helped so many kids and that the Early Care Foundation has helped so many
kids. We are very lucky that we have very good staff. You know, the people who've been involved, who run the program. And I end up getting all the, the admiration. But I'm on the shoulders of other people who do the work.
Yes.
And they are the people who go to the provinces all over the country. You know, we have been involved in four provinces. Gauteng, Limpopo, Free State, and the Western Cape.
Wow.
Yes, even the Western Cape. We have a committee, and we also have a development board.
Right.
The development board, there's the trustees, like every organization has to have a board. And then we have a development board, who are people who are like our ambassadors. They come with their special skills. They come, they help us with fundraising, and also with whatever special skills, whether it's legal, it's fundraising, it's
advisory stuff, all of that.
They come with special skills that help the organization.
Do you think that the pandemic has made it more difficult for the Early Care Foundation? Has it made it harder for you to access funds, to be able to distribute the funds?
You know, some of our funders, some of the companies that used to give us money annually have not been able to because they themselves were affected by the pandemic. And that, of course, has a trickle effect in that it means that we do not receive the funding that we had budgeted for, and then we have to cut some of the programs. We cannot do whatever we wanted to do. It's not just the economy that has suffered. The owners of the crèches have not being able, because the parents were not working. The parents couldn't pay because they were not working. That resulted in the children not coming to the crèches.
Right.
And of course, in that way, then the children are not exposed to the safe, secure, stimulating environment where they get the nutritional.
Are we going to be able to catch up? Will we be able to fill the gap?
Well, we do hope. That is why we are asking the public to help us. We are hoping to raise, at least if an individual donated 400 rand a month,
right,
that would make it possible for a child to come back.
So if I give 400 rand, there's a child that's going to be put through.
Definitely. Cash. In a year, if you donated 4,800 rand, that would make it possible for the child to come to the crèche for the whole year. And that alone will make such a big difference to this child's life.
It's a terrific initiative. I'm sure that there are lots of people who would be willing to do that.
We hope so.
This is the future of our country we're talking about.
You are talking like Mandela. That is what Nelson Mandela said.
There's no bigger cause. There's no greater need for us.
Yes, that is what Nelson Mandela said. A society that looks after its children. I forgot exactly the quote, but you said it already. Yes, that is exactly what we have to do for our children.
I'm just very impressed with the work that's already been done. I think that this is a great cause that everyone should get behind. I appreciate your time. I know how busy you are, and I know how much you dislike doing interviews.
I'm very willing to make interviews that are related to the work that we do. But when it comes to personal, I mean, why should I talk about myself?
You are a mother, so you also understand things from that point of view.
I am a mother, yes. I am a mother. I'm more of a social worker, really, than a medical doctor.
But you're not the kind of person who likes attention. You're not out there trying to get noise.
Please. Thank you.
Well, I'm very grateful.
You know me well.
Well, I'm delighted to know you.
From all the time that you've been with us.
I'm just grateful that you and the terrific people like Ipeleng and the rest at the Early Care Foundation are doing such a good job.
And, of course, we also have to thank the people who were there before, when there were only two people who ran the organization, Deirdre Caldwell and Richard Ferrer. They were doing everything, the two people, and were lucky to get Ipeleng and the practitioner and the trainers, we have a very, very good thing, and I really have to say thank you to them.
Well, thank you
very
much.
For the good work that they are doing.
Thank you, our First Lady.
Thank you
very much. And well done to the Early Care Foundation. A really tremendous job and something we all need to know about. If you didn't know about it before now, now you know, and support them if you can. CliffCentral.com